Hello everyone, this is Artemis doing the topic of the week for March 8th, 2026, which is Veganarchy from Inside, and I'm joined by
Hibiscus. But first, a word in the ear of the psychologists, provided that they have any desire to study ressentiment itself, up close for once. This plant grows most beautifully nowadays among anarchists. Friedrich Nietzsche, On the Genealogy of Morality, page 48.
So some of the household names of Veganarchy are Warzone Distro, Animal Liberation Front, Unoffensive Animal, and some manifestations of Food Not Bombs. They express a wide variety of ideas of veganism, but generally align in the concept of Veganarchy, not just being anarchist and vegan, but that veganism is essential to the anarchist critique, and veganism finds its highest expression in anarchy, as opposed to, say, liberal vegans. Veganarchy is often synonymous with total liberation. As Steve Best puts it, quote, "It is imperative that we no longer speak of human liberation, animal liberation, or earth liberation as if they were independent struggles, but rather we talk instead of total liberation," end quote. The Politics of Total Liberation, 2014, as quoted in Total Liberation from Sindelfinger and Active Distribution. However, as someone who is vegan and an anarchist, someone sympathetic to total liberation, and to some, a veganarchist, I find this movement to be full of contradictions and weaknesses. Primarily, it seems veganarchists are stuck in a classic leftist moral framework, which they often claim to surpass. To quote Why Vegan Anarchy 2025,
"Equality is essential for genuine freedom to exist. There can be no real freedom in this class-stratified hierarchical society riddled with inequalities of power and wealth. Without equality, freedom becomes a mockery. At best, the freedom to choose one's master, boss, or representative, president. Freedom is essential for the full flowering of creativity and dignity for all animals, including humans. To be dominated by another is to be denied the chance to think and act for oneself, which is the only way to grow and develop one's individuality." Warzone Distro.
So it continues here. "I believe I see what Warzone wants to say, self-determination, not of abstractions of nations or other collectives, but of individuals and affinities. But to appeal to equality is to make a mistake. It is a reproduction of slave morality," Nietzsche explains.
"To refrain from mutual injury, mutual violence, mutual exploitation, to equate one's own will with that of another. This may, in a certain rough sense, become good manners between individuals if the conditions for it are present. As soon as there is a desire to take this principle further, however, and if possible, even as the fundamental principle of society, it at once reveals itself for what it is, as the will to the denial of life, as the principle of dissolution and decay." Beyond Good and Evil, 259.
"I'm neither a scholar of Nietzsche nor a Nietzschean. I do, however, take inspiration from him, not so different from how Goldman did. Quote, it does not occur to the shallow interpreters of a giant mind that this version of the Übermensch also called for a state of society which will not give birth to a race of weaklings and slaves." Preface to Anarchism and Other Essays. "Freedom, a rugged, unsafe freedom that Warzone calls for, necessarily does not include equality. It means, in my interpretation of their ideas, an open recognition of the idea of Max Stirner's war of all against all. It seems the subject of veganarchy, animals, treated as a neglected part of the anarchist critique, mirrors some third-worldist or identity politic leftism. The neglected global south, the forgotten intersectional minority, etc., a race to the left, but it goes beyond the human. Fundamentally, moralizing veganarchists feel the protected class of person does not extend to animals." Did you like I did the air quotes when no one could see me? "They say or they're not interested in morality or even positing anti-moral veganism, but the reality is they want to develop a political project that expands the idea of personhood to animals and in some way nature as a whole, i.e. equality. The emphasis on equality is not the only example of slave morality in the veganarchist scene. To argue for this principle while also opposing the anthropocentric or carnist morality mirrors slave morality's opposition to and inversion of master morality. As opposed to equality, we must emphasize freedom, as Warzone Distro rightly does in the second half of the included quote above. In our society, the domination of animals, and the biosphere as a whole, precludes freedom for human animals. The techniques involved in the repression of non-human animals mirrors the in and forms our own. We cannot love the animals or hate them, only an abstraction of them, as their species, as victims, or as food. An attack on civilization, a collection of institutions that cage us, is necessarily a vegan attack, which I believe Warzone Distro would strongly agree with. It opens the world to the real possibility for the war of all against all. It levels the playing field. Humanity, particularly the dominant classes, have strangled us and stiffened all individuals' expressions. To use Nietzsche once again, the aristocrats have become degenerate. Time to free the animals, time to free ourselves. Submitted by Paranthropus, to be elaborated on elsewhere.
Is veganism necessarily stuck in a moral framework? How can an immoral, or maybe amoral, critique help develop a total liberationist outlook that goes beyond the race to the left and slave morality? What are the possible intersections of the anarchy and anti-civilization? What tensions?
Do you want to just hit question one? Is veganism necessarily stuck in a moral framework? I'm curious, as a vegan, which I'm sure I can say here, I don't know, what do you think about that?
It's an interesting question. I think something that's always interested me about veganism as a political choice is that it's marked by abstinence. You know, to me, it feels like it should be a choice. We should be framing it as people are choosing to consume animal flesh. Veganism should be the default. And then people are making a decision to participate in consuming animal flesh. And I think it's kind of funny that it's often
framed the opposite.
It's framed the opposite way.
That you choose to be a vegan rather than a carnist or an omnivore, whatever term you want to use.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of the critiques, these are not anarchist critiques, they're not leftist critiques, but sort of critiques from non-vegans that who are not particularly political thinkers are often critiques of consumption. Like, oh, vegans, you know, they're always eating quinoa and avocados or whatever. Where are your ethics now? But it's funny because you don't have to eat quinoa or avocados to be vegan. It's just not eating something. It's refraining from eating something.
Right.
So
let me follow up with that is, because I also hear, particularly from vegan artists, it's not just a diet. Like, it's an attack on, like, veganism finds its best expression in the widest ability to negate or confront speciesism. And that it's not just, because you might, you know, still believe human, you know, you might take an ethical perspective that's, well, I still believe it's better for, you know, humans are still better than animals, but I just choose not to do it because I feel bad or something. You know what I mean? Like, there's still some underlying aspects to veganism that could be speciesist.
Right.
That it's more than just a diet because people don't want to be, it's not just a boycott.
Sure. Right? Yeah. And I don't mean to kind of simplify things, but it is for most people at the base level, it's withdrawing from the exploitation of animals.
Right. Right.
Which is not participating in a system as opposed to forward moving sorts of things. And of course, I think one of the things that makes veganarchism distinct from that is an effort to think about, okay, and what are the structural changes we're going to do? You know, vegan abolitionism of, well, it's not just enough to opt out of this system because we're all complicit in it. We have to abolish animal exploitation, which is, yeah, more forward moving or thinking about actions to take as opposed to simply not acting. So I guess that kind of circles back to the moral framework question. If you focus on it as a politics of abstention, it is going to be somewhat inherently moralizing because it's going to be about individual choice.
Like responsibility and
And even the ways that many people, many vegan activists conceptualize vegan activism is oriented around a sort of evangelical approach. The goal of vegan activists should be to convert other people to veganism as opposed to other ways that we might abolish these structures. And the minute that you turn to convincing or converting other people, you're making some sort of appeal to morality.
Right.
Either to them or amongst yourselves, where it right. becomes, how do I tell people that eating meat is wrong?
Right. Right. I mean, I think that when I see those videos of people doing it, it is inherently like, oh, look how bad this thing is, which, I mean, in a sense, if you want to, you know, I can use the word bad and not feel, you know, I consider myself pretty immoral in my critiques of a lot, but it's like, I can still use the word bad because, or offensive or whatever, but it's like, when I also, when I looked at it, I was like, maybe it's just me, I was like, I don't find any of that shit convincing either. I found, you know, I consider myself freedom slash vegan-ish for the last like 2-ish months or so, mostly by just seeing other people do it and having intimate conversations with people, including you, that like I know, right? That I'm like, okay, I have these critiques and I'm kind of just not following through on them, right? In a same way that I would be critical of like, or that like Mormons aren't effective missionaries when they're just doing the standing on the street. Like, you don't have a relationship with these people, right? Like, it tended to be, well, you know, missionary work tended to also be combined with, we're just destroying your culture, but had to be, a lot of the effective missionaries, at least, were like, I spoke the language of the people. I knew, like, they knew me and I knew them, versus like preaching like the modern day, like, oh, we're like Paul and we're telling everyone they're going to hell and God hates fads. Like, who are you talking? Are you talking more to yourself? Almost is how some of that comes off, is like they're fulfilling a moral need for themselves to be like, at least I'm trying to convince people.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I think honestly, part of the reason it's very hard to convince a stranger to be vegan or whatever is that anybody who thinks about what is happening to animals, to non-human animals, we know that's not a liberatory thing. There's something visceral of, oh, like, slaughterhouses, that's messed up. And I think that's why there is such a strong reaction to vegans, why people feel defensive. It's because it's not really a secret that this is happening. It's not a secret that there's something carceral about it. There's something
right.
punitive, torturous about it. And so I don't think it's ever really a question of convincing somebody, oh, veganism is, you know, the correct choice, quote unquote, as in a more moral kind of term. I think that people already have an awareness that what is happening is, I don't know if you want to say wrong or off or some other word.
Authoritarian,
abusive.
Right.
I think that is knowledge that people mostly already hold. And frankly, a lot of what people who aren't vegan do on a daily basis is just kind of a cope.
Right. I mean, I came across this yesterday. I'm sure it's something I've probably heard before, but it's like the four ends of justification with cognitive dissonance, of acknowledging what's happening to animals, but then still eating meat or animal products, whatever, is the four ends are natural, normal, necessary, and nice. Mm-hmm. Right. And so natural is the belief that humans are omnivores and meant to eat meat. Normal, the belief that everyone does it and standard social behavior. Necessary is that meat and or like dairy and things are required for protein and health. And nice is the belief that meat tastes good and brings pleasure, which is basically means like enjoyable, not nice to the animal, but nice to the person. Which actually I'm thinking almost, I've been immediately when I see like, oh, it's nice or natural, reminds me of the Smiths' Meat is Murder, where that's part of the chorus. It's neither natural, moral, or brave, or something like that. I'm blanking on it, but I make a similar appeal, like encounter to that. Which I mean, the whole thing with also like appealing to nature in either direction is also still like functionally like thinly veiled morality, and it also doesn't work. And that gets into a whole like criticism of humans are far more plastic than even like anti-civilization anarchists want to admit. Like, if humans were so incompatible, this shit would have collapsed a long time ago, but that's a whole other,
that can come up with question number three, but I just, yeah, is veganism necessarily stuck in a moral framework? It doesn't have to be, but we live in a moral society, so most oppositions to modern society are going to be moral.
Right.
Because we're also conditioned to be almost like moral creatures by society or whatever, right? And so it makes sense. And it's also the people that become vegan tend to be at least liberal, mm-hmm. right? In which liberal and leftism do a lot of what kind of Nietzsche talks about, the same morality. And don't get me wrong, right-wing people do it all the time too. It's just that it's all white people are the victims as opposed to, you know, people of color, working class, global South, that mm-hmm. it's easy to just plug in another group.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It fits into the leftist worldview, which is also why leftist vegans get so frustrated with non-vegan leftists. They're like, dude, like the same criticism is there.
Right.
But then if you're like me and you're a non-left anarchist, right? Or at least I see myself that way. Others might not. But like, I'm not interested in just like, oh, well, it fits into the critique. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not interested in like another oppressed group, right? That I speak for in some savior perspective, which is a majority of the left. But I don't think it has to be, but I think you have to really confront it. And also, I don't think it's necessarily, ironically, wrong to make moral arguments sometimes. I just think if you are, you need to be honest. That's what it is. You're not making objective statements if you're making a moral argument. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think turning back to those four ends, like a lot of them are meant to, disarm the sort of moral critiques. Like if something is necessary, if you need to eat meat or you will die, this is sort of, I'm sorry if this is if it's problematic to quote Hannah Arendt here, but you know, this whole argument about like if somebody is holding a gun to your head and they say you have to kill your friend, you actually still have the choice. You could choose to be shot in the head rather than kill your friend, but most people don't conceptualize that as a choice. And my argument with veganism is I don't necessarily know that veganism is healthier. A lot of people say that it is or that it isn't, or make arguments back and forth about the health of it. And I kind of don't care. I mean, if I'm going to like, you know, die of a B12 deficiency, you know what? At least I will have died not torturing animals.
Yeah. Also, I mean, I've been reading a lot since I've become vegan. Like, I've been reading so many papers. Mm-hmm. And it's also, I read one that says one thing, and the next paper says literally the opposite, mm-hmm. which is a part of, like, health science in particular. Like, we're not particularly, like, those sciences aren't well developed as much as people want to believe that there's, oh, there's absolute truths about how it means to be, like, an optimal health. And mm-hmm. it's like, that's not true.
Yeah.
And part of it is, here's the thing, you can be a vegan, you can be totally like carnivore paleo diet. You could be omnivorous. Here's the thing. A majority of the way we eat in modern society is going to be unhealthy.
Yeah.
Now you might alleviate that with certain practices, but a majority of what we eat is bad, right? I think that's like almost just the non-start to a lot of these things. And that all of them, even in natural, or we could say non-modern, maybe is a better way to put it. Non-modern, you could say indigenous, whatever, life ways, each of them, I lost my thought with that. My point is all of them carry health benefits and health negatives.
Yeah.
Right. If you eat only meat, you are more predisposed to certain health problems
sure.
versus if you're vegan, like B12. B12 is the big one. Possibly some bone weakness. That's mm-hmm. that's one that I read about. Though I know there's also part of that just might be a lot of vegans don't eat. You can be vegan and healthy or vegan and unhealthy.
Yeah.
Right. There's vegans that just eat straight fucking junk food.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, you know, what is it? I just was watching a video. It's like milk. There's milk, you know, there's, you know, cow milk. And then there's like, not plant alternatives to milk, but like basically a calcium alternative. And it was some plant. I feel like I'm totally wrong when I say like asparagus or celery, but it was something like, it was some leafy green that has nearly an equatable amount. Now, of course, the amount you have to eat is different from milk. But point being is, what are you eating? Because if you say vegan, like, though your veganism and my veganism might look totally different in terms of nutritional input. Mm-hmm. And that means something.
Yeah.
But.
Well, and you talk also about sort of the anti-civ / veganarchist overlap, or if there are, where the possibilities are for that overlap. And the thing that kind of, the more I started to think about the nutritional side of veganism, like, the thing that kind of blows my mind is, like, we are just using animals as biotechnology.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, yes, the song Biomachines from Earth First is literally, we have, when people talk about cyborgs or whatever, it's like, that's animals. Right. Like, what we've done to them on a genetic level, and the how often some of them get literally plugged into machines. Mm-hmm. Right? That, it's literally, yes. Like, you're, yeah.
We're just, we need certain nutrients, and we're not interested in figuring out how to get them ourselves. We've also created this capitalist society where it's like, you don't have time to, like, cook, to process things like yourself, because you're busy working, and there's no time for yourself. There's no time for community. There's no time mm-hmm. for, like, those things. And so it's, like, far easier to eat a steak than to process grains and vegetables to get the same nutrients that you would, that have already been processed by the cow that you're eating.
Right. Yeah. And so we can get to number three soon, because I really want to talk about that, because I'm curious what you think, because we've been having those conversations a little bit. But number two, which I think kind of is where we're going with question number one, is how can immoral or maybe immoral critique help develop a total liberationist outlook that goes beyond the race to the left and slave morality? First of all, I think if it starts to confront a certain morality within itself or within total liberationism or whatever, it necessarily confronts the issue of violence, in that it allows for, or property destruction, or whatever, and it's better suited to a diversity of tactics versus, often a lot of vegans tend to also kind of align with a pacifism, because they're all about, like, harm reduction, is what I tend to find liberal vegans are about, is, like, this global harm reduction. And if we use violence or things they even interpret as violence, which you and I probably wouldn't define that way, is, well, you're actually increasing, you're bringing more harm into the world. And that's not aligning with vegan ethics. And so that's one development that could come out of it. And I think, at least generally, like, not to say being moral or having a moral framework precludes the possibility of violence, because obviously the left has capacity for violence, even if it doesn't act on it, it's still hyper-moral. But also, I think if you confront this morality, which is functionally a type of groupthink, you're better suited to see animals as individuals and not as a collective of, like, victims, mm-hmm. right? In the same way, you know, I might be, you know, anti-racist, but I'm not saying, like, oh, well, all people of color in one group, such as, you know, African-Americans or Hispanic immigrants, are all, like, this monolith. Because I think moralizing about groups tends to lead to making a monolith of them. And so looking at animals as individuals with individual interests and such gets over the kind of species. Well, animals are this flat experience that's species based.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and it's tricky too, because so there are many vegans and politically active vegans who do have experience with farmed animals, and have met farmed animals and have interacted with farmed animals. But there are also plenty of people who have not.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, I think, a fairly valid critique of veganism having the potential to, as you were kind of alluding to, just, like, you know, literally a name of one of the vegan groups is Anonymous for the Voiceless. And it's the idea of animals not having voices, non-human animals not having voices, and we have to speak for them.
Come on.
I mean, I honestly have known some chickens. I have not really known any cows. I don't feel like I can speak for all of these animals. I certainly know basic things about most beings having a desire to live, and I can see an animal suffering and say, this seems to violate liberationist principles.
Right, right.
But it's not the same thing to sort of be, it's very convenient to have a political subject that is an object that you are acting on behalf of.
Right.
You get to kind of make up whatever you want. You get to say, well, this is what needs to happen. This is what's best for this group. And if that group is a group that we don't know how to communicate with yet, or we don't have the tools to communicate with effectively, you can just kind of do whatever you want. And then that,
mm-hmm.
it just becomes a sort of a vector for whatever your underlying beliefs are. And you and I have talked about the sort of carceral streak among some liberal vegans of like, oh, like this person abused an animal. Let's make sure we like throw them in jail, let them rot in prison and like things like that, which are not, you know, you've just decided, well, this is the category that you care about and this is the category that you don't.
Yeah, become like a single issue type.
Exactly.
Right, when vegans are only interested in this, which again, the total liberationist perspective is confronting that directly.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to be anti-carceral.
Yeah.
If you're a total liberationist, you have to be anti-racist. You have to be anti-misogyny. I think of also the overlap between being a feminist. I saw it was like a meme. It was like, you can't be morally consistent, a feminist, and drink milk. Mm-hmm. And like people in the cows in the comments, wow, were like, wow, like I'm all for veganism, but conflating a woman and a cow. And so the top comments were like, I hate to tell you something, but like, that's how society treats women, are seeing them as cows and cows as like,
mm-hmm.
that's not like we should see them that way. That's how society, you know, and I think, and I'm jumping ahead to three a little bit, but I think a lot of eco-feminist anti-civilization thinkers that are in this wide view. And I think some total liberationists, I can't speak to all of them because I haven't read enough, do see like perhaps the early beginning of the oppression of animals corresponded really closely with the oppression of women.
Mm-hmm.
Like there is some relationship, like how, or was it the sex? What is that? It's like the eco-feminist book we talked about, the sets of meat, the meat, sexy meat or something.
Oh, the sexual politics of meat.
Sexual politics of meat. Ah, the sexy meat, of course. Yeah, the sexual politics of meat, which I believe gets into some of that like overlap of oppression or whatever, some way, but yeah.
Well, and jumping back to two, you know, there's a sense in which morality becomes, it's, you need sets of rules when you're not interacting with people, with other people, when you're not interacting, and I'm using people in the broadest sense of the word, like morality happens, the more you erode community and the more you have sort of structures that you have to negotiate with, that's where morality arguments become the most sort of integrated into people's thought, because if you're in a community space, you don't need morality. You don't need absolute rules because you're just talking to people. You're figuring things out. You're negotiating with other people. And so because we're so removed from, because we've created this system where it's like these animals are bred and then they live their lives in this captivity and then they're slaughtered and then the meat is packaged and then it ends up in the grocery store.
Where's the community?
Where's the community? We don't interact. I mean, many people do interact with this process. And typically, I think it's like a 6-month burnout period for slaughterhouse workers or something like that. And most people who work in slaughterhouses end up with like PTSD symptoms and things like that. So we are... Some people are paying the cost. Some people are in community with these beings that are being tortured. But most people who are consuming the final products are not.
Right. There's a separation, which it's funny. Do you mind if we jump to three?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Yeah, because I think, you know, my good friend Jamie, who's like, oh, you know, most people don't know what it's like. And he's a hunter. He's like, most people don't know what it's like to kill an animal.
Mm-hmm.
Which is funny because a vegan could say the same thing and mean it in a totally opposite way.
Yeah.
And for him, it's, you know, and where some of that goes, we're not going to get it, but I'm reminded of that, like what it means. Most people don't get it. And I think that's where some vegans are like, would you be willing to, you know, and obviously some people do, some people hunt, and I'm not here to talk about that because that's a whole other fucking can of worms, though obviously it probably will come up in question number three. But yeah, just interesting how some of the talking points of like a certain almost a radical hunter primitivist perspective could resemble animal, like animal liberationists, vegan arguments, because they're both concerned with, this isn't how we should be relating to our food,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah. And when the question of hunting comes up, obviously there's the huge question of indigenous hunting practices and where does that fall in veganism? And the way that I see it, that's not even... It's not even a...
I don't think that's a question that vegans need to concern themselves with, other than maybe, you know, indigenous vegans who are discussing that in community, because it's like, what we're up against is so huge, and it's not indigenous hunting practices. It's slaughterhouses, it's factory farms, it's feedlots. And so I feel like we can start there. And when we have a more just world, and when we have, you know, had a successful struggle for land back, and when we have decolonized other things, then those conversations can maybe happen with whatever future world that looks like. But
yeah. And I will give some, I'm going to do a little bit of devil's advocate for the vegans that are upset about indigenous hunting practices, because the reason I feel like they really need to talk about it is because that is a counter argument to veganism, that, well, we do hunt. Indigenous people hunt, which there's two ways that can go, is A, this is part of, you know, you can say the whole, it's natural, right? Like, this is part of our evolutionary legacy is meat consumption, or you, which I'm more sympathetic to a degree, versus this sort of identity politic of making a monolith out of indigenous people who have been disrupted from that lifeway already. For the most part, like, a majority of indigenous people in the world aren't hunting.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't, you know, but then that does get into, like, the whaling situations, or I believe it was it Greenpeace that went up to, like, the Arctic Circle and were trying to stop indigenous people from clubbing seals or something.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll be honest with you, like, that is not my fucking concern.
Yeah,
is exactly. Going, like, I'm concerned more about the bit, like, if you open up some of those vegan timers that are, like, this amount of animals that have been slaughtered.
Yeah.
I'm way more concerned about that, if I'm going to be real with you.
And that's not, that, those counters, there are not enough baby seals being clubbed to make those counters.
Right.
Like, it's not statistically significant relevant to the huge amounts of slaughter
that our culture that we participate in is doing.
Exactly.
As opposed to, I'm going to go tell this other culture, of which mine is, and I'm not trying to do, you know, whataboutism, but your culture is significantly worse on ecological impact, on animal and human suffering, yeah, than these cultures. Now, there is, we should bring up, are you familiar with, oh, please go.
Sorry, one more thing about please. That, though, is that a thing missing from the conversation is how, you know, European colonizer settler agriculture disrupted those hunting practices.
Yes.
For example, in Texas, the reason that there's a huge problem with bison, with a lack of bison, the reason that bison have been so heavily impacted is because of cattle.
Yes. Yes.
So.
Yeah. And so what you're going to tell me was more moral for agriculture to take over this continent than there was existing, which, by the way, the agriculture on this continent from Europe did more to harm animals than any hunting would have ever done. Like, that's like, that's just a fact. The mass extermination that was associated with pulling people off the land, asserting them into agricultural practices, and agricultural practices, as anthropologists have acknowledged, to when it reaches a certain point, means everything else has to go. It has to be exterminated. But yeah, are you familiar with the vegan primitivist Rhea Del Montana? Does that name mean anything?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so she's like she tries to combine it, kind of synthesize an ecofeminist critique, an integral primitivist critique, in like a vegan critique, and for her, the roots of what we do here with animal holocaust that goes on is rooted in hunting. I have some problems with framing it that way, because it's like the Hadza never developed that, and they're one of the longest continuous hunting gathering cultures. This idea that this leads to that, to me, I don't know, is just kind of odd. And I mean, I tried to think of a counter, like an example to go otherwise, but it's like, does like foraging necessarily mean you have to do like genetic engineering on plants today? You know what I mean? Like, to me, that's not quite the same thing, but it's close enough. Well, you do this, you necessarily must do this later.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So like, she's associated with Warzone Distro, and I'm only mentioning them for the fact that they're part of this anti-civilization veganarchy overlap. They take a similar position. They also, Warzone Distro, publishes a lot of like critiques of indigenous hunting claims, of which, for example, I believe one of their zines, or maybe it was a conversation with Flowerbomb I had, and I want to say authority affiliated which one it was, but it was definitely like, oh, a lot of indigenous people didn't hunt until Westerners showed up, until Europe. And I was like, that is, you're making shit up. Like, that is just objectively not true. And this, like, you were, you almost are so maybe self-conscious of your own veganism's history, or the history, like the biological evolutionary history of veganism, that you have to rewrite history. And a lot of Rhea Del Montana stuff to me basically is, like, she functionally claims, I wish I had her book, like her writing in front of me, and, you know, go and look into this, but her book, Eco Patriarchy? The Roots of Hunting and Misogyny, or I don't remember the title. Like this history of human deep time, human veganism is covered up by modern anthropology. Like, it's literally a conspiracy in the field of anthropology to cover up the fact that we're like frugivores.
Honestly, that's, again, I feel like that's so, we don't need that to be true.
Right.
Anything, you know, right. Anti-civ doesn't have, it's not, there's this idea that everything has to go back to the way it was in some mythic before, but our world has been completely transformed by so-called civilization and by the technological changes and the terraforming that we've done through climate change. Like, there's not a going back to before. It's how do we move, how do we deal with that, and how do we divest from those things now? And that's a different, it's a different world, and we can fight the worst things that civilization has produced and figure out how not to be doing that anymore.
Right.
And even if we go back to some sort of hunter-gatherer situation, we're going to be gathering berries filled with microplastics. Like, that's a different set of, I'm sorry to use this language, material conditions from...
I'm not against the word material conditions. I think people just overuse that phrase to describe some weird shit, but that's, no. Yeah. But
it's a different set of material conditions, and that's something that we got to grapple with too.
Right. I'm going to quote a little bit here from Mr. John Moore, his Primitivist Primer, which I'm pretty sure I've quoted at least twice on here already, but it's a really good one. It's, I'm going to read the whole thing. The section, it says, where, according to anarcho-primitivism does power originate? Again, a source of debate among anarcho-primitivists, Perlman sees the creation of impersonal institutions or abject power relations as the defining moment at which the primitive anarchy is to be dismantled by civilized social relations. In contrast, John Zerzan locates the development of symbolic mediation in its various forms of number, language, time, art, later agriculture, as a means of transition from human freedom to the state of domestication. And then, I'm going to skip ahead. There is no blueprint, no prescriptive pattern, although it's important to stress that the envisioned future is not primitive in any stereotypical sense. As Fifth Estate said in 1979, quote, let us anticipate the critics who would accuse us of wanting to go back to the caves, or a mere posturing on our part, i.e. enjoying the comforts of civilization, all the while being its hardest critics. We're not posing the Stone Age as a model for our utopia, nor are we suggesting a return to gathering and hunting as a means of our livelihood, end quote. As Moore continues, as a corrective to this common misconception, it's important to stress that the future envisioned by anarcho-primitivists is sui generis. I'm totally mispronouncing that. It's Latin. It is without precedent. Although primitive cultures provide imitations of the future, and that future may well incorporate elements derived from these cultures, an anarcho-primitivist world would likely be different from previous forms of anarchy. Which is, I think, right. And some people are like, what does that even mean? As you correctly saying, I have written about in other places, the world that is coming through, even just alone, not even take human, intentional human political action into account, the climate that is coming is going to resemble, in some ways, the past, of the fact that we are in a strangely, like, stable climatic time. That shit's about to go out the fucking window. The Holocene or the Anthropocene is ending. It is going to be replaced by climatic instability, generally tending towards warmth, but some places are not that way, which is very similar to parts of the Pleistocene where it's climatic instability. However, we are going to have literal megacities that aren't going away as soon as civilization's gone. We have microplastics. The water is undrinkable. Like, the world and the material relationship to that world will be different. Might it generally resemble a foraging or a hunter-gatherer life, whatever you want to call it? Yes. But the way they relate to the world would be different than they did in the Pleistocene, in the early Holocene, and they do now. Well, it might look more actually in common with what they do now. The Hadza, for example, most indigenous hunter-gatherers do this, but they have to live on the margins because they've been forced out of everywhere else. And I imagine it might look similar to that. But also, our knowledge of the world doesn't simply go away. Though it is more, it's far too complex for any one person to bring it back or to understand it. But yeah, I think all that to say, I think you're right. Like, the world that is coming, if it is primitive, it won't be primitive in a way that is primitive now or primitive in the past, right? The world will be different enough that we have to consider our food, right? You know, even like a vegan-archy foraging utopia, the food's fucked. Like, the food that grows out of the poisoned ground and soil has, you know, microplastics, that's fucked.
Well, the food that we ourselves, our bodies produce is fucked. Milk is full of microplastic. Breast milk.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
All the hippie shit about how breast milk is better or whatever, like, perhaps, but it's also full of plastic now.
Right. And so, I mean, we're kind of almost making a non-argument here for vegan-archy anti-civ, but, like, the intersections to me are, as again, as the person wrote here, it's like, an attack on civilization, a collection of institutions that cage us, is necessarily a vegan attack, because an attack on civilization restraining the agency of animals and humans, or humans and non-human animals, like, levels the playing field, mm-hmm. right? And talking about hunting, I have a good friend of mine who is vegetarian for a lot of reasons, but used to be vegan and is anti-civ. Kind of more, a little bit more misanthropic, I think, but still anti-civ. It was like, well, it's one thing to be a hunter that you are in relationship to the land, you get back to the land, and another one where you, for as much as anyone else, you live in mass society, but then you go and hunt. Like, that is just, you're actually still engaged in the same exploitive practices as everyone else. You're just slightly more involved. It's like, that's not like living off the land if you go back to your shitty apartment and go to your 9-to-5 job. Yeah. And then you just hunt occasionally. Like, that animal could have survived on the margins of where mass society hasn't killed it yet, and that you struck its life short for the sense of, like, you might justify, oh, I want to feed my family, I don't want to be so dependent, which if you're hunting with a gun, like, you're still dependent.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. Now, there is the dynamic is different because you're at least bearing witness to the death of the animal. But it's still bullshit.
At the same time, I mean, pipeline workers, if you talk to pipeline workers, they'll be like, oh, I love this job because I get to be outside.
Yes.
And it's like, you're destroying the outside.
Right. You're the grave digger.
Right.
Right.
And it's a cognitive dissonance. But then on the flip side of that, there's like the biggest wetlands preservation group is like, I think it's like Ducks Unlimited or something, the like duck hunting.
Whoa. Yeah. Yeah.
But they need the wetlands so that people can continue to hunt duck.
Yeah. Like, again, that's the tension. Like, it's not so clear cut.
Yeah.
Like, vegans could do a whole lot more in terms of being on the front lines of ecological protection, but they're not. Like, they're just not. It's hunters because they have an innate interest.
Well, we got to get our, Daiya Beyond cheeseburgers.
Oh my God. That's the whole thing. I was talking to someone. He's like, does that express like a sort of like self-conscious attitude that everything needs to look like and taste like meat for vegans? I know some vegans are actually like, on principle, they won't eat it, that stuff, because they're like, I'm not trying to LARP as a carnist. Yeah, but I want to get back to the intersections because, there is, I can appreciate, as much as I think people have seen some of the beef between Uncivilized and Warzone in some ways, especially if you've been to some of the book fairs, I can still appreciate there is a fact that Flowerbomb gave to me, probably, was this 2 years ago? A year ago? Something like that, I'm suddenly forgetting. But, like, why is it that a majority of the anti-civ outlets and distros and projects, they're vegan? It's like, because they see the whole apparatus of oppression should include animals, which again, maybe is still kind of leftist, but it's still true. It's like, you're at least being, like, reductive if you're not acknowledging, like, civilization does some insane shit to animals. Like, civilization couldn't have gotten here without doing this to animals, right? In the same way, like Kevin Tucker points out, the worst that civilization does, it does to children. It mirrors others' oppressions of women, of the worker, or whatever, and of children and things like that. So I think there's a kindred narrative here between veganism and anti-civilization. I don't know what other... I think that I'm also reminded of that. You want to explain the whole, the thought experiment of the genetically modified pig who wants to be eaten?
I unfortunately don't remember enough of it, but it's like, basically the premise is, what if you genetically modify a pig and the pig's just like really excited to be eaten? And that's right. Like its ultimate fulfillment. Like, is it ethical to eat the pig?
Right. And so my immediate response is, if you live in a society that does that, to have taken away the animal's agency by genetically modifying it, to me, like, that's an anti-civ argument.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those, some people are like, well, we can reform society and not do that. Like, but you don't know you can. Like, this idea that we can just plug in and kind of turn off things we don't like in society is just not how human society has ever developed, is intentionally, like, turning things off and on that we like. And that it's like, to me, an anti-civ critique just precludes the possibility of this thought experiment ever coming true. Mm-hmm. That the thought experiment just wouldn't work in a society in which you can't genetically modify animals, which to me is oppressive and authoritarian to genetically modify an animal.
Well, and it's interesting too, because, you know, the pig that wants to be eaten is such an abstract. It's like, oh, that's, you know, this scientifically distant, it's not something we could do or whatever, but that's what we do to sheep. Like, people will be like, oh, it's okay to like take a sheep's wool because it needs to be sheared or it will get sick. The reason that sheep, that domesticated sheep need mm-hmm. to be sheared is that we've genetically modified them
yep.
such they need to be sheared. Wild mm-hmm. sheep have a completely different relationship with that process.
Right.
So all of the things that we use to justify certain types of animal consumption come back to the fact that we have bioengineered all of these beings to lead existences where they are dependent on us, or, you know, even without the bioengineering, the reason that cows benefit from being milked, the reason that they are in pain if they're not milked, is that we have had them produce, you know, give birth. We've taken the child away from them, and then they have
no way to
yeah. get, you know, have the milk released.
Right. And so it comes back to this four ends, the need. Oh, well, it's almost an inversion. So, well, the animals need us mm-hmm. to do that. It's like, they only need it because we've designed them, again, like machines or designer babies. Like, the way we fear about us doing to humans, like, we're going to modify them to be exactly what people want. That denies agency and that's eugenicist. I was like, that's been happening to animals for basically 10,000 years. And it rapidly accelerated the last 100, 200 years.
Yeah.
You know? Like, think a little bit harder about where some of those criticisms go, you know. And I can see some of the hunting primitivists be like, well, I'm trying to increase my agency by hunting, like, I don't want to be so dependent. And I can be very sympathetic. Well, yeah, like anarchists should be able to have autonomous food systems or food, you know, sustenance or subsistence methods, sure. But again, it gets back to, like, if you're just still dependent on the system, you're killing animals in addition to what's already being killed. Or aren't there other ways to increase your autonomy from the system without it being dependent upon killing things, right? So it's like, I think of, can you build shelter? And I'm not to say the people that would say this aren't unable to do this by any means, but can you build your own shelter? Do you know what plants are edible? Do you know what's medicinal? Can you navigate? You know what I mean? There's so many other skills that you can do to increase your autonomy, right? But then it gets back to, I'm not, as someone who's at least tries to develop an anti-moral critique, I don't think murder on its own is bad, right? So it's like, this word separates me from a lot of vegans is I don't care about hunting in an indigenous life way. Now, there's some cultures that do it, because I'm not going to make a monolith, like where someone's just literally, and I do think there's a difference between animal abuse and killing an animal. And I think there's an important distinction. But like, there's some indigenous cultures that just abuse, like just straight up abuse animals as a parts of rituals, right? Or part of their hunting process is doing that. And I'm not in favor of that, but it's also, what is my criticism of those cultures doing?
Right.
Like, what am I, again, I have significantly bigger problems with people that genetically modify animals or test on dogs and rats. like the one the video I showed you of that, was it Berkeley? It wasn't Berkeley. They did the thing, they stitched the animal's eye, monkey's eye shut, put a sonar dish on its head. Like, that's a significantly bigger fucking problem for me.
Yeah.
Right? And so as a primitivist, I have some tensions of, you know, I do look to these societies generally as more free and like as a inspiration, but they leave part of their systems and strategy is in contradiction to the way I feed myself now.
Yeah.
From an ethical, semi-ethical perspective. But, yeah.
Well, and also, it's the other portion of that is, it's one thing to have abstract conversations, but I and I think you and I think most people genuinely want to see a change.
Right.
And if you're thinking about it from that perspective, again, the only way, it makes just so much more sense to start with factory farming, to start
right.
with
those
structures. And frankly, you might have more success if you target indigenous practices, but you know why you would have success? Because of colonialism.
Right, right.
Because you're targeting a marginalized, a group that has been deprived of sovereignty by the state that relies on you and on me as part of its justification for existence, mm-hmm. a settler state. So.
Yeah. And so I just, the last part of that, what are the tensions? We kind of talked about that earlier. Is if someone wants to make a material argument about, okay, in a post-collapse world, most people can't feed themselves on a vegan diet without agriculture. At least now, like, it is a point in which there was significantly smaller human populations, more plant diversity. We had knowledge of these things, sure. But I think part of it is, no matter what, there's going to be enough to go around. Like, that critique just doesn't work. That's just another ethical issue primitivists and anti-civ people have talked about and will continue to talk about. It's like, it's also part of, and the longer it goes, the worse that collapse is going to fucking be on people trying to feed themselves, which probably means they'll overhunt.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Or they'll overexploit plant resources.
Yeah.
In the same way. And they're the same thing in this situation. But I don't know. What other tensions do you see?
For me, the tension is, I mean, can't we try? Maybe that sounds naive, but we're...
Try what?
Can't we just try to avoid our exploitation of animals? Like, can't we just our best to get there and just see what happens if we try? I feel like some of these arguments are just like, well, there are all these situations where this might not work, so let's just...
Throw it out.
Yeah, throw
and
it out.
And so let me, I'm not quite following. When you say try, when you say non-exploitive, like in an anti-civ context or in a wider, or a vegan context?
Yeah, generally? Like we're not, I mean, anti-civ is not a present active reality. It's
right.
It's
yes.
Prefigurative.
Right. Yes.
Like, can't we just do our best to get there and build what that looks like?
Because we haven't tried
exploitation of animals.
Right.
You know.
For sure. I agree with that, and I think there's. I mean, I've definitely become more sympathetic. I think if people remember the vegan versus hunter argument, I still. It's funny because that book got published after that from some of the vegan artists who were like, "Oh, Artemis was way too kind to the hunters." And I remember Bjorn and Jamie were like, "Man, you were like way too lenient with the vegans." Like, no matter what, people are going to dislike how I handled that episode. And so I think some people, I've had some people like, "Oh, did they convince you the vegans convince you?" I was like, "Well, no, because my arguments are also just totally separate from theirs. They make these evolutionary and health and ethical claims that are very separate from mine." Now, I might like some people. That's why I don't really call myself a vegan artist in the way that they might call themselves vegan artists, because I think my critique is just so different, which is cool. That's totally, I'm cool with different critiques. It's not, we all have to say have the same one. And so, but they did talk about that and say, why does an anti-civ critique necessitate the abuse and killing of animals? It doesn't necessarily. So I could be sympathetic to when Warzone, Rhea, I think certain aspects of the Animal Liberation Front have been kind of have seemingly kind of overlapped with the anti-civ movement. At least ALF in the United States / kind of the Western countries definitely, I think, peaked at the height of like Earth Liberation Front and like the anti-civ critique, like Green Anarchist. Like there was big overlap, which I don't think is a coincidence that this radical, almost like biocentric or anti-anthropocentric perspective was all together. And I think if you read some of the anti-civ stuff then, like, you know, Green Anarchy, Green Anarchist, Kevin's Species Trader, are in favor of animal liberation but not being vegan, so there's still sympathy for what's going on, even if they themselves are not vegan. You know, and so it's, and I also wonder, it's like, I feel like we've kind of lost the plot a little bit. We're like, we generally are on the same page about a lot of shit, but the issue is the things we're not just seem so important for a future that just doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But also, I guess when I say that, though, I'm probably rambling, but then Jamie would be like, well, no, because there is some level of, like, we can be doing things now into him that would include hunting. Mm-hmm. So then that gets into, I guess there is some, like, we are trying to prefigure. So how do we prefigure if we can't get on the same page?
Yeah.
I'm sure there'd be some criticism there, but I'm not going to say I have any answers. I don't know. You have all the answers, right?
Oh, yeah.
This totally. Is, yeah, this one you actually give your, this I'm going to give you the platform for a vegan artist anti-Civ manifesto that you've been cooking, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Just on the back burner. Yeah. Need a couple more tweaks, though. I don't
know. Is there anything we hadn't talked about yet that you want to bring up, or do you think we're good here?
No, I think we got it covered.
Cool. Okay. Well, this, oh.
I guess the one thing is, like, I think we should all just keep talking.
Mm-hmm.
Keep talking to each other.
Oh, the free marketplace of ideas.
Right, exactly.
Right. Like, oh, so I'm assuming, you know, this is like basically vegan Charlie Kirk. I'm going to go to college campuses. Hunting animals is bad. Change my mind.
Yeah, exactly.
Turning point veganism.
Oh, Jesus. But no, but what I mean by that is part of what hopefully there is common ground on is this idea of we got to figure out a way to make decisions together.
Mm-hmm.
And even as that with a very just bare bones, starting point, like that is prefigurative. Mm-hmm. We can start that process now. We can talk to people who have different ideas about whether anti-civ is compatible with veganism and the extent of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like those are conversations that can be happening now.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I think that's good. And that's part of what, like, some of my projects, I'm self-plugging, like Uncivilized Podcast and like Plastic in Utero have been trying to do is like, they're big tent on purpose, but not big tent enough that it has no plot, so yeah. To speak. That's like, we need to have some common fucking, I'm not going to publish some like pro-tech shit. That just isn't going to happen. Or some like, whatever, like pro-civ, whatever, but there's at least big tent enough, and some people still think like by being big tent, like I'm choosing a side, which is fucking almost like to me like anti-intellectual in a way, like, oh, you're picking a side by being big tent, which is from an animal liberation perspective it's like, oh, well, that's like if you platformed a racist in an anti-racist publication or something. But and I can see where they come from on that, but I disagree for various reasons that I'm not going to. We're already at an hour almost, and I don't have time to be upset about the interaction that I had, but yeah. Well, Hibiscus, I appreciate you coming on and doing this with me. And this has been Artemis and
Hibiscus.
Thank you so much.